Today's Washing Tech episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at washingtech.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And also Warby Parker. Get a free 5-day home try-on at warbyparkertrial.com/joe. 5 pairs, 5 days, and the try-on is 100% free. That's warbyparkertrial.com/joe.
We refuse to go through this transition without bringing up poor people, without bringing up the disadvantaged throughout the history of America, without ensuring energy democracy, where every person who has been left behind is given that opportunity to build wealth and start something new.
Welcome to the Washing Tech Policy Podcast. We deliver the latest tech policy news and brightest tech policy experts to you.
Wherever you are, so you can stay productive, relevant, and informed in less time.
From Washington, D.C., it's the Washing Tech Policy Podcast with Joe Miller.
Mark Zuckerberg comes under direct assault ahead of a shareholder vote to keep him on board. Microsoft defends election security, and Randy Abreu is my guest today. Hey, everybody. Two civil rights groups, Color of Change and Majority Action, are circulating a proposal and meeting with Facebook's shareholders, pushing to oust Mark Zuckerberg from the board. Color of Change President Rashad Robinson wrote, quote, "Lasting change to address the misinformation, discrimination, violent movements, and data breaches that put users, especially black users, at risk, cannot subject to the whims of a single person," end quote. Currently, Zuckerberg controls 57.7% of voting shares. The Hill notes that 35% of Facebook's shareholders withheld votes last year. Here in D.C., D.C. Senators Blumenthal and Hawley wrote a bipartisan letter to the Federal Trade Commission urging it to wrap up its investigation into Facebook, calling for significant damages that exceed the $5 billion that some reports have anticipated. Several sources have reported that Facebook has told federal regulators at the Federal Trade Commission that in addition to paying what's expected to be a multi-billion dollar fine, it will also bend to additional oversight. Any major changes that Facebook plans to make to the platform would now need to go through a more rigorous approval process, and Facebook would need to hire a new privacy executive that the FTC pre-approves. Facebook has also redesigned its website to emphasize group messages over the news feed in order to address privacy concerns. Russia took a huge step last week to close itself off from the internet. Vladimir Putin signed a new bill that would allow his country to develop a sustainable, fully functioning, and secure sovereign internet to defend itself against potential cyber attacks. The bill envisions doing this by creating a Russia-specific domain name server. Senators Steve Daines and Gary Peters introduced a bipartisan bill that would prevent the Customs and Border Protection's ability to sell personally identifiable information like addresses and social security numbers to third parties. Senators say the new measure could help prevent identity theft and credit card fraud. Uber and Lyft have stopped adding new drivers in New York City approximately 3 months after a new law went into effect that requires drivers to earn at least $17.22 per hour after expenses. The new law is intended to address low pay, but also reduce the number of unused ride-sharing vehicles on the road. Politico noted that Uber and Lyft drivers have earned some $56 million more than they would have prior to February 1st. Several hundred employees at Google offices around the world, including London, staged a sit-in last week to protest alleged retaliation against Google employee Meredith Whitaker for organizing a 20,000-employee walkout to protest the forced arbitration for sexual harassment complaints provision that used to be in Google's employment contracts. During the sit-in, other employees spoke about instances of alleged retaliation that they, too, have experienced. Google released a statement saying it takes retaliation seriously and that it offers multiple channels by which employees have the ability to complain about retaliation, including anonymous complaints. Finally, Microsoft has taken the initiative to beef up election security by offering a free software that secures and validates votes and elections with new encryption methods. The company says it is ready to release early prototypes by 2020. Keep in mind, though, that it won't be prepared for significant deployments until after the 2020 elections. Events. Federal Communications Bar Association has a CLE on lawyering social, legal issues in social and digital media. That's tonight, Tuesday, May 7th, from 6 p.m. to 8:15 at Wiley Ryan, 1776 K Street. Tomorrow, May 8th, the Washington Post is having its 116th Congress State of Play with Nancy Pelosi. That's going to be a live stream. House Administration Committee is having a full committee hearing on election security also tomorrow, Wednesday, at 10 a.m. at 1310 Longworth. The House Committee on Energy and Commerce is having an oversight of the Federal Trade Commission Strengthening Protections for Americans' Privacy and Data Security hearing. That's tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. at Rayburn 2123. Looking to Thursday, May 9th, the House Small Business Committee is having an event on a hearing on the digital ecosystem, New Paths to Entrepreneurship. That's 10 a.m. at Rayburn 2360. And the FCC is having its open meeting on Thursday as well. And that's from 10:30 to 12:30 at the FCC, which is located at 445 12th Street Northwest. And you can find links to all of these stories in the show notes and also in our Twitter feed. And our handle is at WashingTech. Stay with us. For WashingTech Tech Policy Podcast listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download. Get educated wherever you are. Your car, your walk to work, the gym are all a classroom with audible.com. How about This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate by Naomi Klein. You can download This Changes Everything free by trying audible.com. Sign up for your free audiobook and 30-day trial today at washingtech.com/book.
Tech policy is global policy. This is the Washing Tech. Tech Policy Podcast. Serving the world.
My guest today is Randy Abreu, Senior Legislative Advisor to Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Abreu served in the Obama administration, where he was appointed to the Department of Energy's Office of Technology Transitions and Clean Energy Investment Center. He's an alum of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute and Google Policy Fellowships, and is currently a Google Next Gen Leader, Internet Law and Policy Foundry Fellow, and member of the Bronx Progressives. Abreu has a personal history of advocating for social justice and federal experience, producing regulations and initiatives on intellectual property, drones, self-driving cars, cybersecurity, broadband access, spectrum, and more. Please welcome Randy Abreu. Randy, welcome.
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
Listen, it's good to have you on again.
Yeah, again.
So, last time you were on, no one even knew who Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez even was, outside of New York, that is, and really the Bronx.
That's right. That was a good time.
And now you're on her staff.
I am.
So tell us about that. What's it like working for AOC?
It's an honor. She's an inspirational figure, to say the least. It's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Last time we were on here, there was no mention of her. I had met her already and was working with her on her campaign, and already knew she was a pretty special person that was, regardless of what would happen in that primary, was on her way to do an amazing public service in our country. And a lot of people in our community saw that, and I actually voted for her. And having someone fresh and new to bring these ideas to D.C., it was an honor to be asked to come work for her.
It's so good to see. As a New Yorker myself, it's just, she's so inspiring. So you've been working on the Green New Deal.
Yes, I have.
And so for those who haven't read it, what does it say?
It's the Green New Deal resolution, House Res 109. It's a call to action in itself. It lays out the most ambitious reindustrialization plan in American history. What it asks for is for Americans to recognize the global warming threats, the greenhouse gas effects, and how it's impacting the climate in our country. It's just asking Americans to recognize that as a reality. And it's putting together a plan to solve this amazing challenge that we have. We need infrastructure in this country. We need to rebuild our roadways. We need to rebuild transportation. We need to rethink our education system. And yeah, we need to think about our energy system. And the Green New Deal is a plan to transition our energy economy to 100% renewables, to make sure that we answer the calls of the international community and 99% of all scientists in the country that say, you know what, it's about time. We've been warning folks for about 20 years. We should transition away from fossil fuel energies. And the Green New Deal is that plan to start transitioning away. And there's a lot that goes into that.
And then you have, I see a couple of these knuckleheads on social media saying that the Green New Deal is actually racist. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, the Green New Deal, it's the exact opposite of racism. I'm a historian, Joe. So I remember the New Deal was, in effect, racist. There were policies put in place to ensure that folks of color, specifically Black, African Americans, would not get access to some of the jobs of the New Deal, would not get access to some of the housing with the redlining that occurred right after the New Deal. And the racist policies of the New Deal have not actually been brought up and talked about enough in our society. What we hope to accomplish with the Green New Deal is to show that, hey, we can take a pretty good idea from the past that was absolutely not perfect, find the gaps in that policy from the past, try to recreate it now in the future, do it better, do it bigger, more inclusive, more equitable, and actually ensure that we lift people out of poverty, close the racial wealth gap, which is one of the goals of the Green New Deal included in the resolution, and eventually do what the scientists have been asking us to do, which is transition our energy system from fossil fuels to 100% renewables.
So which members are supporting this? What are some of the arguments, some of the other arguments against the bill, and what are some of the counter narratives that we should, the public should be aware of and start messaging on?
Yeah, we have over, I think, at this point, all but a small handful of every presidential Democrat candidate running for office right now has endorsed the Green New Deal. Oh, almost 100 members of Congress have endorsed the Green New Deal. And arguments for it are pretty much what we've been talking about. The arguments against it that we've been hearing are, it's just kind of funny to me to think that these arguments are coming from some of our nation's most important leaders. We're talking, the arguments that are coming out are, hey, they're talking about getting rid of all the airplanes. They want to get rid of all your cows. Don't right. You like filet mignon? Yeah. What are you doing supporting the Green New Deal?
Yeah, I saw the guy standing at the podium with the hamburger or something in his hand. I was like,
what was that, Five Guys?
Yeah.
I don't know what he had. But it's so you see from that they're arguing from a position of, A, they're arguing from a position of weakness because all they can do is kind of laugh and try to bully you. And also it's in bad faith, their arguments. It's clear that a lot of these folks, it's actually public, that a lot of these folks are bankrolled by the fossil fuel industry. And a big, big strategy of the really, really conservative alt-right has been disinformation, misinformation, manipulating the media to ensure that folks in the middle of the country and even folks on the coast don't actually get all the information that they need to make well-informed decisions. And that's why you see, no, I do love my cows. We had folks from the cattle lobby come in into our office just to drop off beef jerky, just to let us know the Green New Deal will end us. And I'm sitting at my desk, Joe, eating this jerky. Like, this is delicious beef jerky. Why would we ever want to get rid of the cows with the Green New Deal? What we're really talking about is engaging the country to accept that this is a reality and we can get the brightest minds in the room together. We are the most diverse country in the world. I'm sure if any country can accomplish this, it will be us. We can get the brightest people in the room together, talk about the policies, to talk about the initiatives that need to go down so that we fully transform the energy system. But what we are talking about, what Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez is talking about, is that we will go through this transition one way or another, but we refuse to go through this transition without bringing up poor people, without bringing up the disadvantage throughout the history of America, without ensuring energy democracy, where every person who has been left behind is given that opportunity to build wealth and start something new in this new transition.
So which provisions, Randy, of this deal, the Green New Deal, are most relevant for tech?
Since starting working on the Green New Deal, maybe like last July, last August, and it's two specific factors that I think need to be brought up. With the Green New Deal in itself, we're talking about landing moonshots. We're talking about creating the 21st century smart grid. It's a smart grid because it's connected to the internet. It's IT, IP. And the next moonshot that we need to do to actually get through this transition is to develop and invent the super battery, something for storage capacity of all the end. Let's say we're generating a ton of solar energy, a ton of wave energy, a ton of wind energy, because those are renewables. There's enough sun, there's enough wind, there's enough water out there. We can generate a lot of that. However, currently right now, the technological hurdle and burden that we have is that we don't have a place to actually store all of that energy that we're generating. The first person in this world to invent the super battery that can store all of that, it has changed the face of humanity forever. And I really do believe the American people are in a great position to be first in line to invent the super battery, create it, and then kind of export it across the world, similar to how we were first to land on the moon, and that kind of shaped the rest of the 20th century. We really do need to create the super battery. But that tech innovation calls into question IP reform. What kind of incentives are we giving our most creative, innovative thinkers of the 21st century to go out there and actually take the risk to invent this super battery that we need? Sure, we can, and we do plan on incentivizing this with competition grant challenges that already exist at the Energy Department. But what I'm thinking about here, thinking outside the box and how our communities are engaging around IP reform, is that this brings up the opportunity to talk about equity and fair use one more time. Sometimes I think about our cultures and how we put up videos on YouTube that become viral success stories. It could be a music video, it could be a dance, it could be something like the Shiggy dance. And what the Green New Deal actually does, it opens the door to IP reform simply because of all the fascinating tech innovations that we need. If we can get both communities together, the tech community, the IP thinking community, together with the scientists and the clean tech community, we can create new IP laws that open the doors for everyone, not just environmental innovations, but all types of innovations. And it's a new opportunity to get all folks in the room talking about this issue one more time. And the Green New Deal opens the door for that.
Well, Randy, thanks again for joining me. It's just, I really want to see this bill pass. What's the schedule? What's the schedule now? What are the next steps?
The resolution itself, it's still pending in the House. So the Senate did actually bring up a joint resolution of the Green New Deal. Mitch McConnell wanted to push it through. It was politics. And I mean,
right,
we knew this going into it, that a Republican Senate and a Republican presidency wouldn't actually sign the Green New Deal bill.
Yeah.
What we do anticipate is using this to push forward more bills during this Congress, engage Americans on the vision. For example, something that's really close to me is bridging the digital divide. When we talk about the Green New Deal, if we talk about infrastructure and rebuilding our highways and roads, we know this. We're digging ones. The policy is to dig ones. We're laying down broadband cables underground while rebuilding the roads, but also we're siting 5G satellite cells all across America in order to connect that spectrum mesh that doesn't exist yet. We're talking about rural America really has no access to internet. But in the Green New Deal, rural America needs access to the internet because drones and new agricultural innovations are going to help farmers succeed and hand something down to their kids instead of losing everything like we've seen.
Yeah.
So the Green New Deal right now, though the Republicans control 2/3 of our legislative government, it's a battle cry. And my call to, I'm asking everyone to get out there and engage with the Green New Deal. There's a Green New Deal inside all of us. It's just a matter of looking at the 14-page resolution, seeing where you fit in. For example, like how we just talked about IP reform or bridging the digital divide, there's so much more that exists in here. I've talked to folks that care about the trains of America. I've talked to folks that care about self-driving cars. talk to folks that care about just soil reform and agriculture, and folks that just care about 3D printed housing, because we have a housing deficit of 7 million affordable housing apartments. So there are many ways to solve many challenges in our country, and there is one Green New Deal that can get us there.
Hopefully the New York City resolution will give us some lessons learned and hopefully apply on a national way, but also address some of the issues that have continued from policies of the past. In New York, for example, I like to talk a lot about Robert Moses and all of the effects that folks in the Bronx still experience from the building of the Cross Bronx Expressway and all the folks who were displaced when that happened. And by no stretch of the imagination can we let that happen again. But anyway, we're going to turn now to your icebreaker, your career hack, and your pick for our book this week. Okay, Randy, it's time for this week's icebreaker. You ready?
Sounds good.
If you could describe yourself in three words, what would those three words be?
Oh, man, three words. I would say optimistic, creative, and searching.
Searching.
Always searching.
I'd say creative, rebellious. I don't know. Should I say that out loud?
Rebellious. Oh, it's too late. You said it already.
And the third one is I have a bit of an addictive personality. No.
Hey.
But now you can't you can't say creative.
Now you got to tell us about your vices.
We'll just say that's my three for like right this minute. They could change the next minute. You know, we got to think on the fly here. So what's it like working for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? What's that like? What was the biggest culture shock for you, and how did you adjust when you went and worked on the Hill?
Yeah, working for her is like nothing else, because you really feel as if you're talking to someone your own age, someone that you understand, someone that understands you, and is in the position of great influence and great power. And it really feels like all the training I had been doing my entire life, all the preparation, had come to this moment. So that's a surreal thing for me. The other surreal thing that I had to get used to was the sheer popularity of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's I think back to, I want to say like last August, September, she and I, we were in California on a trip after the primary. And we're standing outside of a coffee shop, just like walking up to it, about to grab coffee, go to a meeting. And these people are about to hop onto the San Francisco subway, and they just scream, "Alexandria!" And everyone floods to her and starts taking pictures, and it's like really in love with the person. And that hasn't changed. So it was a seeing that, realizing that and adjusting to it, and now still seeing it months, almost a year later, getting even more and more powerful. It's something that I've just become used to at this point, and I love being a part of it and seeing every second of it. It's like no other working for her.
What are you reading these days?
You know what? Because of all the work I've been doing on the Green New Deal, I haven't had too much time to read books and novels, for example. I was reading a cool one on it was more like a biography talking about James M. Buchanan in the 60s and the rise of the political right. But I'd be lying if I said I'm not actually reading the IPCC International Report on Climate Change and the Mueller Report, just kind of trying to pull some documents and some notes together for that. As you know, the Congresswoman is on the Oversight Committee as well.
Yeah.
So there are some, I just feel like there are some things that I should always be reading and catching up on. So I haven't had too much time for a novel.
I love her questions on there. And then I love seeing folks on the same knuckleheads on Twitter. I love seeing them squirm and come up with just outrageous things to say because they don't have anything substantive. I'm reading Fascism by Madeleine Albright, which is a great survey of what fascism has been in the past and how it's manifesting itself in the current administrations around the world, including ours.
That's really cool.
So Yeah, yeah.
Are there any comparisons that are made from the past that you can see happening right now?
There's a lot of them. For example, from grand scale to just like the minutia, like the uniforms. I believe, I'm not sure about this, but I believe the uniforms of Secret Service in front of the White House changed to brown since Trump came in, and that was the color of like the SS. They wore brown.
Oh, wow.
I've learned a lot about Mussolini, for example, that I didn't realize that he was just like, he wasn't even elected. It's like the people didn't even really want him to be their leader. So it gave me a new understanding of that. But it's just really an interesting read, and it's Madeleine Albright. So it's clear, it's concise. And I just love her. She's got a brilliant mind. I just love listening to her. Do you have any final ideas you'd like to leave with the audience before we close? And where can folks find you online?
Always think about bridging that digital divide. It's important to me. It should be important to all of you. And I do think the Green New Deal can help us get there. Funny enough, I'd love to keep talking about that. Feel free to find me anywhere online at Abreu and the City. Abreu, A-B-R-E-U, and the City, kind of like that show on HBO. And that's always reach out. Would love to keep talking. Love to keep in touch.
And you've been listening to Randy Abreu, Senior Legislative Advisor to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on the Hill. Randy, thanks for joining me.
Joe, thank you so much for having me on again.
That concludes episode 184 of the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do, we'd love to hear from you. Please take a moment, head over to Apple Podcasts, give it a review. It helps others know what they can expect from the show and really helps us out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you back here next week. Take care.
Washington Tech.